Frank Muir goes into optimism and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
After a long course of psychiatric treatment, the patient was cured. "Well," said the psychiatrist, "your life's in front of you now. What are you going to do with it?" "Well," said the patient, "I've got high academic qualifications, so I can really take my pick of the jobs. I might try the law, politics, advertising, public relations, management, broadcasting, writing, perhaps. On the other hand, I might go back to being a teapot." "I've got this great idea. I'm going to cross a carrier pigeon with a woodpecker."
"Why?"
"Well, so that before delivering a message, it knocks on the door." Paddy and Seamus were walking past the offices of the Forestry Commission when they saw a sign, and Paddy said, "What does that sign say, Seamus?" He says, "Well, it says, tree fellers wanted." "Ah," said Paddy, "we'll come back tomorrow and bring Mick. Maybe we'll get the jobs." "I'm breeding a new animal."
"Are you?"
"I have. I've got great hopes for this animal."
"What is it?"
"Well, it's half parrot and half tiger."
"Oh, is it a good talker?"
"Well, it doesn't actually say very much, but when it does, boy, you better listen." An Aberdeen couple were shipwrecked on a desert island, and after a week, their clothes were torn to shreds, their provisions had run out, they were absolutely exhausted. "Jock," said the wife, "things just couldn't be worse." "They could, you know, Flora. We might have bought return tickets." The cavalry officer was bawling out a young recruit on a horse. "Trooper, I ask you, we've only got one spur on." "Yes, sir," replied the trooper, "but if I get one side of the horse to go, I expect the other side will go as well." An Irishman was boasting about how he kept his money in a sock under his bed. His friend said, "That's daft. I mean, you lose an interest that way." "Oh, no, I'm not, you know. I put a bit aside for that, too."
"Look at that girl walking along the promenade. What's she doing?"
"Looking for her boyfriend."
"Oh? What's his name?"
"She don't know yet." The wife took her husband to the doctor. "Doctor, I'm very worried. He keeps thinking he's a horse." The doctor examined him and said, "Yes, I know this complaint is not as uncommon as you think. Lots of men do think they're horses. There is an operation that can be done, and it costs quite a lot of money, and it's not done on National Health. Can you afford it?" "Should I think so? He won last time out at Ascot." Chap went and saw an accountant. He said, "I've got some problems." The accountant said, "Yes." He said, "Well," he said, "you see, I've got this house that costs £75,000. I've got a villa in Scotland that costs £20,000. I've got a shooting lodge up in Ireland that costs £15,000. I've got a home in Rapallo in Italy. That's about £7,000. And I've got this yacht which costs £35,000, an aeroplane which costs £50,000. And the accountant said, "Well, what's your problem?" He said, "Well, I only earn £12 a week."
Optimism and humour tends to be rather short-lived. I'm afraid the funny part usually occurs when a character's optimism is shown to be ill-founded. There are many comic characters based on the conflict between their own blind conviction that things will work and the inexorable law of nature that they don't. Don Quixote is a good early example. And most slapstick gains strength from the juxtaposition of confidence and incompetence. But optimism is a desirable human quality. Alexander Pope.
"Hope springs eternal in the human breast. Man never is, but always to be blessed."
But optimism without fulfillment is not enough. Francis Bacon.
"Hope is a good breakfast, but it is a bad supper."
Come to think of it, bacon's a good breakfast, but a bad supper. But if you're optimistic, you need a degree of blindness about the future. Kin Hubbard.
"An optimist is a fellow who believes what's going to be will be postponed."
So your optimist marches boldly forward, defiant as Julie Andrews climbing every mountain, whistling whenever he feels afraid, packing up his troubles in his old kit bag, or singing another of those chirpy little songs which are meant to keep the blues at bay.
Oh, and you're feeling kind of blue.
Kind of blue.
And you don't know what to do.
What
oh, well, you've got a load of troubles on your mind.
On you.
If you face them with a smile, it'll make your life worthwhile. And you're older than me now. It's a life.
sing this happy song with me. And just a simple melody. Once those skies above are grey, you can face the world today. If you're only learned to say, oh, to get on when your life is filled with care. Oh, you will hear it everywhere. Oh, though the world may wear a frown, here's a way to win renown. Tell them as they strap you down.
There's Michael Flanders, from the sound of it, doing a bit of swan upping. Michael Flanders and Donald Swan. In these cynical times, optimists are sometimes hard to find, and some hide their natural face behind a mask of pessimism. It might be useful to have a few definitions so that we can spot the difference. First, from James Branch Cabell.
The optimist proclaims that we live in the best of all possible worlds, and the pessimist fears this is true.
From McClanber Wilson.
Twixt optimist and pessimist, the difference is droll. The optimist sees the donut, the pessimist the hole.
The American's rather keen on this sort of paradox. Here's another one from a one-time United States senator called, believe it or not, Chauncey Depew.
The pessimist thinks all women are bad. An optimist hopes they are.
Optimism is a part of human nature, an instinct deep-rooted in the indomitable spirit of mankind and the other creatures of the world. An instinct which has been played on, perhaps, a few times too often by the maker of those endless nature films or animalogues.
Took only 5 years for our cameramen to get these shots of a now extinct desert shriddle emerging from his egg 25 feet below the surface of the Yakahoola Desert. Yes, 25 feet. Surely one of nature's strangest quirks. He's not a very handsome little fella, is he? But he's got a heart as big as all outdoors. Watch him as he starts his long and arduous climb to ground level, following a deep-rooted instinct that is one of nature's strongest. Munch, munch, little Shredloo. Climb, climb, little Shredloo. Only a few feet to go now, and he'll be there. One more inch, and yes, he's made it. Now he looks at the great prairie night all around him. The Shredloo's only enemy is the prairie kumquat. Find him one of nature's tastiest morsels. And that, as far as we know, was the last of the desert Shredloo. And considering his rather specialized diet, it's quite likely that that was also the last of the prairie kumquat. Truly, one of nature's tragedies.
Michael Binti. It's important for an optimist, whatever disaster faces him, to look on the bright side. It's part of all those old clichés about whether you say your glass is half full or half empty. Or which alternative you take from this anonymous poem.
Two men looked out through prison bars. One saw mud, the other stars.
But whatever happens, you must make the best of it, says Walter Winchell.
An optimist is a man who is treed by a lion but enjoys the scenery.
Malefactors are rather good at this sort of optimism, too. Malefactors retain a cheerful hope that their unlikeliest stories will be believed. Let's have some examples from the press. First, a report in the Sutton Times.
When asked why he was carrying a heavy iron gate hinge early in the morning at the premises of a Croydon firm, he was alleged to have replied, "I was going to make a birdcage."
Trying to get it on the cheap. There's some... You're very kind. Another quotation from the Bristol Evening Post.
A South Mead man found with a screwdriver and a pair of wire cutters in Canford Park at night was said to have told the police he used them to adjust his artificial leg.
And one from the Hearts and Essex Observer.
When the sergeant was fined £2 for travelling on the railway without paying his fare, he produced a warrant which had already been used for a previous journey. A railway official said that when asked to explain previous clip marks on the warrant, the defendant said, "Moths."
I love that one. If you believe that, you believe anything. But there are more serious subjects which require a hopeful outlook. Unpleasant inventions like the A-bomb and the H-bomb tax our resources of optimism considerably. It's a great comfort that the British stiff upper lip retains its starch. A report from Illustrated magazine.
"There is a simple answer to the atomic bomb," says dapper, quiet-voiced Brigadier A.M. Toy, VCMC. "It is that no weapon has ever been invented for which the answer doesn't exist."
That's a comfort, isn't it, really? We've got to do find it. While we're on the subject, let's have a little more reassurance. First, from the Bath and Wilts Chronicle.
Writing in this week's British Medical Journal, Dr. G.D. Kersley suggests this reassuring point which might reduce public panic during a nuclear war. He says, "Once a nuclear bomb has dropped in your area, it is unlikely that there will ever be another one in the district."
Phew, that's a relief, isn't it? For every situation, somebody comes up with a cure or a remedy. That's a source of comfort. Whatever new disasters are created, there's always an inventor tucked away somewhere, working on an antidote. And an anecdote. Invention is a calling which requires a great deal of optimism, belief that your idea will work, and is worth doing anyway. There must be a wonderful sense of achievement when the prototype is finally made. From the old News Chronicle.
"I'm glad to be able to tell the House," Mr. Bellinger said, "that the army has been experimenting with an unpolishable button."
I had some of those during the war. Made of green brass. When you're inventing something, you have to be very careful and make sure that your product has been properly tested. The Southport Guardian.
"He'd sold dozens of pairs of these swimming trunks made of a new plastic material before someone discovered it was soluble in water."
Very revealing. There are hundreds of people around with good ideas. A useful suggestion from a letter in the Daily Mirror.
"Dandruff may be contracted by resting the head against infected upholstery in railway carriages. I suggest, therefore, that railway carriages should be boiled for 20 minutes at each station or more."
It's only second class, of course, sir. First class are grilled. I'm sure that we all have an original idea for an invention somewhere in the recesses of our minds.
"I was talking to you about my plans to think of something absolutely new and revolutionary which would change the whole face of the world. Well, I just thought of it. It's called the plib. It's an amazing thing, the plib. I thought of it in the bath. It's very simple and small and amazing. It's very peculiar that nobody thought of it before. It's about 1/4 inch long and 1/4 inch wide, and it's completely round and white. And what you do is drop it into a glass of water and it fizzes. Then you drink down the plibby substance and it cures you of anything. Isn't that wonderful? If you've got rheumatism in the knees, all you have to do is take one plib and within seconds all your troubles are over. And the amazing thing is that it works for every kind of disease. It's a really wonderful invention, the plib. I went along to the patent office with it yesterday to register it in my name. I went in there and I said, 'Excuse me, I've just invented the plib and I want to get it patented before anybody steals the idea.' And they said, 'Oh yes, what exactly is this plib of yours?' So I explained to them what it was and they were very interested and asked to see one. And so I had to tell them I hadn't exactly made one yet. It was still in the idea stage. What I wanted to do was to patent the idea first and then do the research to get the plib into production. They said that wasn't possible unless I actually made a working plib. I've never heard such rubbish in my life. It's the people who have the ideas who deserve all the credit. I mean, anyone can make a rotten old wooden wheel, but it takes brains to think of the idea of the wheel. I wonder what happened to poor old Einstein. He had that wonderful idea about splitting the atom and causing enormous explosions. I suppose he came along to the patent office with his diagrams, they'd have said, "Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Einstein, but I'm afraid you'll have to show us one of your explosions before we can grant you a patent." Sir, then bloody well right if you blow them up.
Peter Cook, of course, is A.L. Whisty. Inventors are often a bit naive about their plans. I'm afraid most optimists are open to charges of naivety. Their ideas seem so good that they get blinded to the claims of reality. Here's an idea from the Daily Telegraph in the late 60s.
Lord Alastair Graham, said Edmondsbury in Ipswich, suggested that the church should send up a Sputnik into outer space with a bishop inside it, which would draw the attention of millions towards God.
Well, which it might well do, you know. Sounds a good enough idea in theory. The trouble with all theories is you can't be sure how they'll work until you've actually done the practical experiment.
In a number of mathematics books, they made reference to something that either proves infinity or the law of probability. They claim that if you take an infinite number of monkeys and an infinite number of typewriters and you set them down and they just type away, that eventually, given enough time, they would type all the great books. Yes. Now, they're going to type a lot of gibberish, but eventually they will type all the great books. Now, if they ever tried this, they would have to hire guys, you know, to check the monkeys to see if they were turning out anything worthwhile. So, I would like to present a day in the life of one of these monitors. Harry, I'm going to check post 14, see if he's got anything. Oh, boy. I don't think that poor devil's ever going to write anything, you know that? Harry, hold on. Post 15 here has something. I think this is famous or something. To be or not to be, that is the Gazornan plat.
Bob Newhart. The optimist must believe that he lives an ideal existence, as Pangloss says in Voltaire's Candide.
All is for the best in the best of possible worlds.
This comforting philosophy is elaborated in Alexander Pope's Essay on Man. Alfred and I will now share a recitation. I start. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
On your marks. All nature is but art unknown to thee.
All chance, direction which thou canst not see.
All discord, harmony not understood.
All partial evil, universal good.
And, spite of pride, in erring reason's spite.
One truth is clear. Whatever is right.
Thank you, Alfred. I think you did that very well, really. Look on the bright side, whatever happens. Every cloud has a silver wedding. All's for the best in spite of disasters. Alfred, an anonymous poem which looks on the bright side, if you please.
I've lost my mistress, horse, and wife. And when I think of human life, cry mercy, 'twas no worse. My mistress sickly, poor, and old. My wife damned ugly and a scold. I'm sorry for my horse.
But things are never as bad as they seem. And if you believe in something, as every film musical will tell you, you cannot fail. Even if what you believe in is a rather unusual pursuit, like, say, teaching ravens to fly underwater.
Sir Arthur, is it difficult to get ravens to fly underwater?
Well, I think the word difficult is an awfully good one here. Mm. Yes, it is. it's well nigh impossible. I think... The trouble is, you see, God, in his infinite wisdom and mercy, designed these creatures to fly in the air,
yes,
rather than through the watery substances of the deep. Hence, they experience enormous difficulty, as you said, difficulty in beating their tiny wings against the water. It's a disastrous experience for them.
Yes. How do you manage to breathe?
Through the mouth and the nose. the usual method, in fact. God gave us these orifices to breathe through, and who am I to condemn him? I think you can't breathe through anything else. If you start breathing through your ears, you can't hear yourself speak for the rushing of the wind. Nose and mouth is what I use, and I trust you do.
Yes, well, I most certainly do, of course.
Good, good.
But what I was meaning was, how do you manage to breathe underwater?
Oh, that's completely impossible. Nobody can breathe underwater. That's what makes it so difficult. I have to keep bobbing to the surface every 30 seconds. Makes it impossible to conduct a sustained training program on the ravens. And they're no better. They can't even be taught to hold their beaks. There they are, sitting on my wrist. I say, fly, fly, you devils. And they inhale a face full of water and...
I suppose they drown,
do
they?
It's curtains, yes, they drown. And, topple off my wrist. Little black feathery figure topples off my wrist. Spirals very slowly down to a watery grave. We're knee-deep in feathers off that part of the coast.
Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. Examples of optimism abound everywhere. You see them in the press daily. Small ads from young hopefuls who really think someone will want to buy their clapped-out old car, or that someone will sell them a house at a price they can afford. You have to be optimistic when you're trying to find accommodation.
Business lady and gentleman would like to rent ground floor rooms or flat in North London in order to breed a litter of wire fox terriers. No children, very careful tenants.
From the magazine Our Dogs. Next, from the Wallasey Times.
Unfurnished, self-contained flat, two bedrooms, urgently required at moderate rent by customs officer and wife expecting quiet baby.
I think that's the optimist of the week, that one. They'd be lucky. So were the hopeful parents who put this advertisement in the Manchester Evening News.
Will the parents of the boy who gave a little boy an apple in exchange for his tricycle outside the Sale Lido on Friday between 6 and 7 kindly return it at once?
Oh, we all live in hopes, don't we? Simple hopes, even, like that when we lift a telephone receiver, we'll get the service we require.
Information.
Operator, give me the number, please, of George Kaplan, K-A-P-L-A-N, at 4411 Huguenot Walloon Drive.
That is George Kaplan.
Yes, that's right.
That is Kaplan.
Mm-hmm, yes.
That is K, as in knife. A, as in aardvark. P as in pneumonia. L as in luscious. A as in aardvark again. N as in newel post. Kaplan?
I think so, yes.
Just one moment. I will look that number up for you.
Right, thank you very much. Operator, if you could try to hurry a little bit.
I am looking the number up for you.
I don't mean to rush you at all. It's just that I'm terrifically late and
That number is listed in your directory.
Operator, there is no directory here. I swear to God.
Will you please take a pencil
yes.
and write the number
yes.
down?
I promise I definitely will, yes.
That number is
hello,
Fairfax
hello,
9.
Operator, hello,
information,
hello,
information.
Operator, you collected my dime.
Information is a free service, sir. When you hang up, your dime will be returned to
yeah,
you.
Miss, listen, I know it's usually a free service. See, the thing is, in this case, I heard the dime, you know, hit all those other dimes. See, I know it's in there, and I wouldn't bother you about a dime, operator. In this case, miss, it's my last dime. I have no change. My car has broken down, and I'm an hour late for a very important appointment. So you can see... Hello?
Information.
Oh, no. Miss, yes. Please return my dime.
Sir, I cannot return your dime to you until you hang up. And when you hang up, your dime will be returned to you.
No, it won't. Operator, listen to me. I know that sound. I've heard it all my life. That dime is in there.
Information cannot argue with a closed mind.
Yeah. Mike Nichols and Elaine May. And let's end this program with the highly optimistic last words of Lord Palmerston.
Die, my dear doctor. That is the last thing I shall do.
For me and Alfred Marx, goodbye.
Goodbye, indeed. Goodbye.
Frank Muir goes into optimism was produced by Simon Brett and John Lloyd.